entertain you with features and music.
Join us here and now.
Weekdays starting at noon on AM 580.
WILL programming is made possible by Columbia Street Roastery, roasting coffee daily at 24 East Columbia in Champaign, also offering a variety of tea and chai, open Monday through Friday from 9 a.m. to 5:15 p.m. and Saturday mornings from 9 to noon. More information is available at 352-9713.
Welcome to Focus. I'm Jim Meadows. WILL's chef in residence, Doyle Moore, was a regular guest on Focus the first Wednesday of each month for more than 30 years. His first appearance on the show was in 1982, and his last was in April of 2012. During what we estimate to be more than 300 hours on the radio, he shared recipes ranging from chili to mac and cheese to holiday cookies. We were very sorry to hear about Doyle's passing early this spring. Our best wishes go out to his friends and family this holiday season. And during today's Focus, we remember the legacy he leaves behind as a part of our show. Former host David Inge remembers Doyle as more than a guest.
Back when we first started doing Focus, we could not have guests on by phone. So we were constantly scrambling for topics where we knew we could get a person to come and sit there in studio and do it with us. And so we were always trying to think of things that we could do. And somebody, I think actually, I better give credit where it's due. I think it was Celeste Quinn, who said, well, why don't you do a show about cooking? And I thought, okay. And then I asked around some people who worked at the radio station, and I said, we want to do this. Who do you think we should get? And it was Grace Babakanian, who was a member of the music staff, who said, I'll tell you who you should get. This guy, Doyle Moore. He would be perfect. She knew him. So I called and I talked to him on the phone, and he laughed a little bit when I said I wanted to do a cooking show on the radio. He said, well, how exactly do you do that? You're going to play the sound of frying bacon or something? He thought that was kind of funny. But I said, well, we'll try it out. Come on down and we'll see how it goes. And it went. It went very well. And so we did it for all the time we did Focus.
The chef in residence, was there a formal meaning to that title?
No. And actually, I don't know. When we came up with that, we just said chef in residence. And we heard from someone who I think actually was a real chef or had trained professionally that was a little irked that we were calling him a chef. And then after that, I started saying, I would say that he was the chef in residence. And I would say, but that's purely honorary, ladies and gentlemen. So we both laughed about that.
And that's an interesting thing because in his life, outside of being a regular guest on Focus, he wasn't a professional chef.
No.
He was a college professor. He taught.
Yes, he was a professor of art and design.
Art and design. So why use him on a cooking show?
Well, the thing about Doyle was that he was a natural right from the very beginning. He took to the show and people took to him. And I think that the reason that Grace recommended him was she thought that he would just be a great storyteller, would be a great personality, and that turned out to be true. And the thing about Doyle is that for him, I think the interest in food went beyond just having fuel to keep you alive. I think he was interested in the traditions that were associated with food and family stories that went with it and travel stories that went with it. He was interested in food as material folk culture, so it was more than just, I eat this so I can live. Plus, I think for him, he always enjoyed getting together with friends. And for Doyle and for his friends, cooking for each other and eating was a big thing.
Was there a certain appeal of having someone who enjoyed cooking as a hobby and had that hobbyist's love for it rather than a trained chef?
Well, I don't know. Maybe it made it more a little bit more accessible, a little bit more folksy. We would just get on there and we would just natter. And people seemed to like that. You know, people would call in and they would give recipes or they would talk about cooking problems. And it was always easy to you could always find something because different people have different ways of cooking the same thing. So you could always say, well, let's talk about thing X, and then you could get people to tell you their different ways of approaching it. And so you could actually have a conversation that way.
Did you know from the first program that this was going to be the beginning of a beautiful friendship?
Well, we knew from the beginning that he would be very good. I don't know that we knew how good, but certainly over time we could see how attached people were to him. He loved doing it. And he had a way of drawing people out. And that really works for a show like that because, well, he and I could sit there and talk to each other for an hour. That's really not what you want.
Now, I'm wondering, he was not a professional, a formally trained chef. Did he ever tell you how he learned to cook?
I think that various points he actually studied. I know that one point he studied in, I don't know how formal you want to make that, but he took lessons from somebody in town who was Indian because he wanted to learn about Indian cooking. So I'm sure from time to time he took lessons, and he traveled a lot. So he would have gone to sample the cuisine in various places. And I think then he would go out and get cookbooks. He would do a lot of reading, search out recipes. And I'm sure when he could, he would get someone who knew that cuisine to show him some things.
Did he ever talk about his favorite things to cook? Did he have some obvious great loves in terms of food?
I don't know if I would say that. I certainly know that from his youth was very interested in Japan and Japanese culture. So he really liked Japanese food. And I think maybe some of the other cuisines of East Asia, including Chinese and Indian. But I'm sure he would not turn down a good plate of pasta or a bowl of chili or some barbecue. He seemed to like almost everything.
Did he ever talk about the why of why cooking was important to him?
I think he was interested in the stories that went with it. You know, the fact that there were important, say, family traditions involved. He enjoyed cooking, but I think that he enjoyed cooking because what he enjoyed was being together with his friends and having that be a festive occasion, even if it was something that was not really complicated. I think he did talk about from time to time certain things that he knew he could make very quick. So he would say he would bump into a friend of his and he would say, come over for dinner in a half an hour or an hour. And he knew that there were certain things that he could do that quick and have it on the table and have really good. So it wasn't necessarily that it was something really complicated, but it was something that I think a lot of when he was cooking for his friends and even cooking for himself, a lot of love went into it. And I think that was for him, I'm sure that it was an expression of affection and enthusiasm for people that he knew and that he was cooking for.
It's interesting that that comes up because I was talking this over with my producer, Lindsay Moon, and she cooks a lot more and more capably than me. I can barely assemble food together to feed myself, but certainly it's important to her being able to share a meal with people she cares about. And when I'm able to do that with somebody, it's important to me as well. Is that something that sort of experience, something that you and Doyle talked about on the air?
I'm sure that we did, because I think that's something that I can associate with. I would not claim to be anything more than a basic home cook, but I like to be in the kitchen and I like to cook and to make something good and to be able to set it down in front of someone and have it to look beautiful, have a nice presentation, to taste really good. You know, the applause is nice. It's great. But it is another way of saying, I love you. Look, I've made this wonderful thing for you. I hope that you really enjoy it. And also then to enjoy that with the person that you're with.
You know, that makes me think, you know, you're talking about being really a more basic cook. Doyle knew a lot of stuff. Was it easy or difficult to talk with him about the more sophisticated aspects of cooking when it wasn't in your background?
I don't know how sophisticated we ever were. It's possible that we talked about some things that were complicated, but I think that he was interested in promoting a kind of approach to cooking that said, well, this is something that anybody can do, and it doesn't have to be complicated to be good. And I'm sure that we did a lot of things that were just kind of straightforward and very basic. It wasn't a high-level French cuisine. It was more, you know, we did a lot of rough and ready things. We did grilling, and we did pasta, and we did chili, and we did pie, and we did, in 30 years, we did, you know, everything we could think of. And he didn't like to repeat himself that much. I'm sure there were things we did over and over again, but he was always looking for new things to talk about. So I don't know that there was necessarily complicated. Really, I think sometimes people make cooking more complicated than it needs to be, maybe because they're afraid of it. Many things, perhaps with the exception of baking, are very forgiving. And so I think that people, they would have more fun and enjoy it more if they probably relaxed a little bit more.
Did you ever share a meal with Doyle? Did he ever cook for you?
No. I to my great regret, I never did. I never was at Doyle's for dinner.
Now, are you cooking anything that reflects anything you've learned from Doyle?
I can't point to anything specific, although I'm sure that talking about cooking inspired me to do it more, the fact that we had that conversation every month.
And listening back to those conversations with Doyle Moore, it sounds like you're having fun and really enjoying both talking with Doyle and hosting the show. What did you enjoy about doing those shows with Doyle most?
Being with him, because he loved doing the show. To him, it was very important. He enjoyed it a lot. And I think for me, I always used to say semi-jokingly that when I came in the morning to do the show, I was not always in the best mood. But after sitting there with him for an hour, no matter what we were talking about, just nattering away and sometimes talking with callers, when it was over, I always felt better. He was a man who was, that's a terrible cliche, I suppose, but he was a man who was full of life. He loved life. And that was contagious. It rubbed off on you. You couldn't not feel good after having spent an hour with him.
Do you have a favorite Doyle Moore story or anecdote from those shows you did together over the years?
Oh, that's difficult. I suppose one of the things that I remember one of the things that we did more than once was chili, which is one of those things it's good to do because it's a guy thing. And it was one of those things that if you talk about it, you'll hear from guys. And I like chili. And it's another one of those things where you can say, here's this basic dish, but you can do with it kind of what you want. So everybody can say, well, this is what my version is. And that's good to get people talking. And Doyle would always talk about how his mother made chili and that he had tried to make it and never could duplicate what she had done and tried and tried and tried. And finally, after having talked about that on the air, someone called in and said, well, this is what you got to do, and explained that she would cook the ground beef and then put in, it was a particular kind of chili powder that he liked, and that was what his mother had used. And she said, we just put in the whole can. And he thought, what? The entire can? And I don't know how many, you know.
Entire can of
the chili powder. And that would have been probably a couple ounces.
Like one of those McCormick's cans? Or?
Yes, yes. And she said, you just put the whole thing in. And suddenly, for him, it was like a revelation. He thought, oh. And he went home and he tried it. And in fact, that was, for him, that was the thing. And then what he would do is he would cook the meat and put it into a loaf pan, and then you could chill it, and then it would set up. And then you could take that brick of chili and slice off as much as you wanted and warm it up, and there you would have your chili. Wow. But for him, that captured the taste that he remembered his mother making and that he had been going after year after year after year. So I'm sure that he picked up recipes from the show, people calling in. But that was one that always stands out in my mind because he talked about it so much, and that finally some listener called in and said, well, here you go. And that was it.
Doyle Moore's last appearance on Focus was in April of 2012, shortly before you retired as host of the program. At the very end of the interview, the two of you run out of time, and Doyle says, but I've still got so many more recipes. And just hearing that makes you think that clearly sharing stories about food was something that Doyle enjoyed a lot. Why do you think he devoted so much of his time to sharing recipes with WILL's audience? Why did he spend so much time on this radio show? What was in it for him?
I think that he liked talking to people. He liked hearing their stories. For him, I think that just the show was very important, and we were really happy to have him. You know, there were times over that time when he had some health issues, and we were kind of concerned about him. But he was always, I can't ever think of a time that he didn't show up, that he canceled because he was not feeling well, unless he was out traveling, which happened occasionally. Nothing kept him away. And I think he enjoyed, when he was out and about in the community and people would hear him and hear the voice and know that they knew him, he liked that. He liked that a lot. He enjoyed it. He enjoyed talking to people. So I think that for him, it was a way of meeting people that otherwise he would not have and hearing stories that otherwise he would not have.
Well, it's Thanksgiving, and we're going to spend the rest of this hour listening back to some of Doyle Moore's recipes for Thanksgiving sides and pies and hearing from people who knew him here at WILL and in the community. You did holiday shows with Doyle every year, and did he ever talk about what he enjoyed most about holiday cooking specifically?
For him, it was being together with other people and celebrating and having a good time and enjoying the food and enjoying each other's company.
Well, David Inch, thank you so much for sharing your memories of talking with Doyle Moore during all those Focus broadcasts over the years.
You're quite welcome.
As we'll hear today on Focus, Doyle had a way of creating conversations about food. It's those conversations that stick out for former Focus producer Jack Brighton. He remembers Doyle as a Renaissance man who was ultimately interested in community.
I met Doyle in connection with the show. He was our regular guest once a month, Doyle Moore, our chef in residence. There were so many great topics that we covered on the cooking show. I remember we did a show about tomatoes because at the end of the summer, my goodness, everyone's got way too many tomatoes. What do you do? And he would always have fantastic ideas for different things that people didn't typically think of. And then that would get the ball rolling and other people call in and say, oh, my family, going back three generations, always did X, Y, Z, and we'd have this big feast, and they'd talk about family traditions and gatherings, and people were naturally drawn. I think that was, you know, a cooking show on public radio. It's almost a parody of itself, right? You know, today we're talking about rutabagas. You know, I can hear the Saturday Night Live sketch right in my mind right now. But he brought so much wealth to the topic of food and stories around food and family that people were deeply drawn in, and it became a real community on that first Wednesday of the month.
Jack also told us that one of the reasons Doyle was such a great person to talk about food with was because he was both creative and thoughtful. He talked with David Inge many times on the show about side dishes and vegetarian recipes because some people can't or don't eat meat. One Thanksgiving, he and David asked callers for the turkey's supporting cast.
Now, we are just 3 weeks away, 3 weeks from tomorrow, from Thanksgiving. Oh. And for a lot of people, that means time to get together with friends and family and have a nice dinner. And also, traditionally, I guess, for a lot of people, the centerpiece there, the main attraction would be turkey. Not everybody does. People maybe have different things. Maybe there are people who don't have meat. What we're looking for this morning is some conversation about what it is, whatever the main thing is, what it is that needs to go with that. As I said before, what are the supporting cast? If that's the star, if it's a turkey, if it's a ham, if it's a goose, if it's a big lump of tofu, whatever it is, what goes with that? What are the important things to go around? What are the side dishes? If you're going to have a big, festive, nice time and you're going to put some effort into being in the kitchen, what are the side dishes that go with this? And this is the kind of thing that opens up a lot of territory. Could be just about anything. If you have a good recipe, and maybe this is indeed one of those things that in your house, it has to be there on the table. It wouldn't be Thanksgiving without that thing. Maybe you can call in and share the recipe with us. Or if you just want to call and say hi, that's fine. Welcome back.
Yes, as a matter of fact, thank you.
Glad to have you here. Is there something that you always make?
No, not anymore.
There would have been at one time. Something?
There would have been green beans cooked for about 4 or 5 hours, six hours with bacon. That would be one thing that would have been used over and over and over. And then, of course, mashed potatoes. You got to have mashed potatoes.
Yeah.
Actually, it isn't so much the side dishes, it's the accompaniments to the side dishes that were even more specific in my family, since mother was Pennsylvania Dutch. And she didn't insist on having the seven sweets and seven sours, but somehow we had them without making a fuss about them. I mean, I just recall all of the things that would have been, you know, cottage cheese, apple butter, bread and butter pickles, chow chow that she would have made, and a relish she would have made, and watermelon pickles that she would have made. And so all of those little condiments that go around, those would only appear at holiday time or very special times. Mm-hmm. And I kept wondering why, you know, how come we're eating these funny sweet pickles and things like that? But there was never an explanation. And I had to learn later about the seven sweets and seven sours of the Pennsylvania Dutch table and love it.
Well, we got somebody here to talk with.
Okay.
Let's go to someone here on cell phone. This is line number two. Hello.
Yes. Hello.
Yes.
I'm hoping you can hear me all right.
Sure.
Yes.
I just have to share this with you. I grew up out in Pennsylvania.
Yes.
And traditionally with our turkey and Christmas dinner, we had a cranberry sorbet.
Oh.
It was served traditionally with the main meal.
Yes.
Served in little sherbet dishes.
Yes.
And it was a tradition that the day before, someone had to churn the...
Okay, yes.
And you're asking me for the recipe. Of course, I'm in the car and I don't have it. But it was a bag or 2 pounds of raw cranberries that were cooked and then run through a food mill.
And then, okay, and in a mill, yes.
And then you make it in an ice cream maker.
Yes.
And then let it sit in the freezer overnight in an ice cube tray so it's flat. And then it was scooped up like ice cream.
Oh, yes.
Into a sherbet glass and served with the main meal.
As a little palate cleanser.
Well, I think, now this recipe is at least 100 years old.
My word.
From my great aunt. So it was in her family. It was always served with both meals. Only at Thanksgiving only at Christmas.
Yes. Well, that is pretty special, isn't it?
It's just cranberries and sugar, and then you put it in an ice cream maker, and that's
good.
It.
Well, get out your what's the maker now, the Danvier. Get out the Danvier, and you'll have it in 20 minutes.
Yeah.
and make that this year. Do that.
I think it's a European. I think it's a palate cleanser. I think that
well,
was
that's
a tradition,
that's how it's used. Yeah.
Served with the meal. And
yes.
So it's just. I've never heard of any other family doing this.
Well, you see, cranberries are American.
Yeah.
And so you aren't going to get that in European inspired recipes. So it really is something from that part of the country.
Yeah.
And local. That's wonderful.
I just had to share.
Yes,
with
cranberry
you
sorbet. I'm drooling over that one because I like that.
Thank you. The color is beautiful. Beautiful color.
That's good.
When it's frozen. Well, thank you very much.
Sure.
Well, thank you
all
for
right.
The call.
Cranberry sorbet.
Let's go on here. We have another cell phone caller here. This is someone on our line four. Hello.
You there?
Yes.
I got you loud and clear. I'm halfway between Chicago and Indianapolis on I-65.
Wow.
I've got a green bean recipe for you.
Yes.
And I want to give you a little bit of background. My mother was raised in Centralia, Illinois. She
yes.
was born probably around 1920, and so a lot of this has kind of southern/farm roots.
Right.
So you start with about 2.5 pounds of fresh green bean. You'll trim the ends, of course, rinse them, trim the ends, but leave them long.
Leave them long, yes.
Yeah. Then you put it in a pressure cooker, which, by the way, I think are making a resurgence.
They are indeed.
So they go in a pressure cooker. Add to that onion, about the size of maybe a golf ball. It doesn't have to be, just to give you a rough idea how much onion. Not
uh-huh.
a whole onion, that's
uh-huh.
more than you need. I put in about 3 cloves of garlic, peeled and split. And then I put in about a third of a pound of raw bacon. Now, you can add, instead of bacon, and I'm not selling Lipitor today or anything, but instead of bacon, you could put in a ham shank.
Oh, yes, a smoked ham shank.
Right, left over from a cooked ham. But I really prefer the bacon and the bacon fat. But you can put the bacon in raw, of course.
Yes.
Then the only change I've made in her recipe was that instead of just adding a little water to cook it, I'll put about 2 ounces of white wine and 2 ounces of water into the pressure cooker and cook it for 2 minutes.
2 minutes in the pressure cooker?
3 minutes, they come out a little too soft. 2 minutes in the pressure cooker, they'll have some body, but yet they're very well cooked. And, of course, the bacon is very well cooked. It won't look like crispy bacon, but it's all cooked. Of course, the garlic and the onion will be almost disintegrated. Salt and pepper would also go in there before you would pressure cook it.
Yes.
But it's a spectacular dish. Drain it and get out of the way.
That's great. Well, thank you. That
my pleasure.
Gives me a new I have a new pressure cooker.
Oh, okay.
My pleasure.
So yeah. I have something to try on that. That's good.
All right.
2 minutes in the pressure cooker and the green beans are done. Good. Well,
great.
Thank you.
Well, thanks very much.
All right, guys. Bye-bye.
Take care. Well, I guess that shows you the virtue of the pressure cooker. That is, the cooking times are seriously shortened.
I know to use dry beans and dry peas and things like that in the pressure cooker, that it cuts it down. But I never thought of putting fresh green. But you see, 2 minutes. That's instant gratification.
Yeah. Is there something?
Yes, there is something that I want to throw in, since there's no one on the phone right now. I got a moment or two. Wild rice, walnut, and cranberry dressing. Not dressing, but I mean, yeah,
like
it's a grain. A grain.
A salad.
You would have as a grain.
Mm-hmm.
Really, really easy to make, and extraordinarily a delicious bunch of flavors. In essence, it's an onion that you will sauté with some butter and cook it for about 8 minutes until it's golden brown. You can add garlic to that if you like garlic and cook that for another minute. So you've got the sautéed garlic and onion together, and then add 3 cups of water and stir in 12 ounces of wild rice blend or wild rice. Now, if you soak wild rice the night before, it'll cook easier and faster, and then it won't be quite so hard to do. But then cook that for about 30 minutes. It takes a long time, 30 to 45 minutes to cook wild rice. And as soon as that's done, transfer it to a bowl and stir in walnuts and the dried cranberries and parsley. And you don't need anything else.
That sort of reminds me, there's one that...
Very fast, very quick, kind of like a pilaf.
There is a wild rice, a nutted wild rice that we
oh,
like.
Oh, nutted wild
house.
Rice is my favorite. Yeah, that's out of the...
That's a silver palate. That recipe.
Oh, I know. By heart. By heart. I do indeed. That is a recipe. Yes.
That's one of Mrs. Inge's favorites.
The nutted wild rice is absolutely wonderful. It's pecans and... pecans and wild rice and orange juice. And
you can find that recipe for nutted wild rice on our website with a few other holiday favorites. Go to will.illinois.edu/focus. I'm Jim Meadows, and for Thanksgiving, we're remembering WILL's chef in residence, Doyle Moore. We'll be right back after this short break.
On the Thanksgiving edition of Fresh Air, we feature one of our more popular recent interviews, our interview with Linda Ronstadt. She's written a memoir and recently revealed she has Parkinson's disease. Join us.
Weekdays at 11 a.m. and 7 p.m. on AM 580.
It's gentle and true. Well, I broke the heart over someone like you.
Support for Focus comes from Bodywork Associates, offering professional, licensed massage therapy to Champaign-Urbana since 1982. Two locations, including inside the Activities and Recreation Center, north of Memorial Stadium on the U of I campus, and on Windsor Road in Champaign. More information is at BodyworkAssociates.com.
Welcome back to Focus on WILL. I'm Jim Meadows, and today on the show we're remembering our chef-in-residence, Doyle Moore. Doyle joined former Focus host David Inge on the first Wednesday of every month on the program to talk about cooking for more than 30 years, from 1982 to 2012. He passed away this spring, and we thought it only appropriate to spend this Thanksgiving Day remembering him. Over the years, Doyle shared many recipes with us. Maybe you still have one of the old Focus 580 cookbooks? WILL's Dee Breeding was the one responsible for transcribing all the concoctions Doyle talked about on Focus. She says one of her favorite things about the cooking show was that Doyle would often bring in samples of what he was making.
One of my jobs was to transcribe the recipes that he would present during that day's program, as well as the recipes that people would call in with. Remember that one of his favorite programs was about obscure things like persimmons and pawpaws, and he would have very old-time recipes. He'd call them receipts, which he would dig up from somewhere, I don't know. And they'd be really unusual things, but they're native to especially this part of the world, this part of Illinois or the Midwest, and it was great stuff. One of his favorite things that I enjoyed making was his pumpkin pie recipe that he shared Thanksgiving time. One of the recipes that he featured wasn't actually his, but it was William Warfield's sweet potato pie, a great pie recipe, which was then tweaked a little bit by our FM host, classical music host Roger Cooper, who had a good relationship with William Warfield. And he put in his little favorite pieces, which adding, you know, Eagle Brand sweetened condensed milk. And that was just a great recipe, great pie. And, you know, that was close to my heart, having those kind of connections as well. One of the things that surprised me about Doyle, actually, I knew him through him coming to the radio station and talking about cooking, but I sort of knew that he had this connection with Japan House, but I didn't realize the extent of it until I went to an open house at Japan House not too long before he passed away. And he actually did a tea ceremony, and I was privileged to be able to sit at that tea ceremony with him. And it just made me realize what an awesome person he was, that he had all these different levels to him. Because I knew him as a very, as I said, folksy kind of cook, which appreciation of folksy down-home cooking. But yet he was very cultured, and he was very, just an amazing person.
Dee told us the recipes Doyle shared were diverse. And listening back to archives of the cooking show, we've heard Doyle talk about everything from Indian food to New Orleans cuisine to down-home cooking. Dee helped us dig up several of Doyle's favorite holiday recipes. You can find them on our website at will.illinois.edu. Included are a few of Doyle's pumpkin pie recipes. He shared several with David Inge over the years.
So this is one of those things that it just seems like a natural sort of thing to do at this time of year.
When we closed our program in September, you mentioned that your wife was looking for a pumpkin recipe that didn't have a pumpkin pie that didn't have a crust.
Yes.
And I immediately leaped on a very old family recipe from my family. Well, the one with the sisters that cook. Mm-hmm. And of course, they argue how this is to be done. But I have extracted that from our family cookbook, and I brought it along, and it's complicated. I'll read it all to you, but it's complicated. But I brought a copy here so you can Xerox a copy and send it out.
Great.
So yes, people call.
So we'll do that. So yes, we can send out copies, and I'm sure that we can also get it posted on our website.
Yeah, after
the show.
Hopefully, before pumpkins are out of season.
Well, can you still do this with a canned?
Oh, that's the kind you use. Oh, canned pumpkin, yeah.
Okay, so no problem. So you don't necessarily have to, because I know that there are people who maybe feel, and maybe it's just because they enjoy doing it, they like to actually make their pumpkin pie using a fresh
pumpkin. Yes, there are, but you know the funny thing, of course if it's on Food Channel, I'm watching it, you know. And Food Channel has been very keen about oh, come on, you can do this if you want to, but pumpkin from a can is perfectly good. Well, let me put my glasses on and start with this so that at least we got it
great
in the works.
Yes.
It's called a pumpkin tort. Now, it's complex, but it isn't impossible to do, and it's easy. And it seems that the grandchildren were the ones who absolutely devoured this upon its arriving every time. But the old folks like it very much, too. It's made in three parts. The crust, which is graham crackers, and exactly 24 graham crackers. You crush them into about a cup and a half of crumbs and add a third of a cup of sugar and a half a cup of melted butter. Now, you know that drill for making a crust
right.
like that, because that's for key lime pies and things
cheesecake,
like that. And cheesecake and
yeah.
all. So that's easy enough. Then there is a first layer of 2 eggs, 3/4 of a cup of sugar, and 8 ounces of cream cheese. Well, you can see it's going to be kind of a cream cheese filling, cheesecake filling, eggs, sugar, and cream. But that is put together and poured over the crust before you bake it. Then you bake all of that for 20 minutes. So the crust is not pre-baked, You pour this creamed together, the eggs, the sugar, and the cream cheese, and pour that over the crust and bake it. And then you set that aside and let it cool. Then there is a second filling, and in that is 3 egg yolks and a half a cup of sugar and a half a cup of milk and a half a teaspoon of salt and 2 teaspoons of cinnamon. So there is the pumpkin, the egg yolks, which is another kind of a custard because mm-hmm. it's egg yolks, milk, and pumpkin. And then the spices, cinnamon and such, you could adjust that if you want to put some. I've been cooking with cloves, as a matter of fact. I'm really enjoying it, mm-hmm. really enjoying it. And I wouldn't mind some cloves in that. Then meanwhile, you dissolve a package of clear gelatin in water. And then as soon as your pumpkin mixture is thickened up, add the gelatin, because the second filling is in the saucepan. And then you cook that up, cook it until it's thick. And as soon as it's thick, you add this gelatin that has been in the meanwhile aisle there. Then in another saucepan, bring together to boil and thicken a tablespoon of cornstarch and 4 tablespoons of sugar and a half a cup of water. And that is then going to make a thickening like. Then, but the funny thing is, the thickening is to thicken the egg whites. And this is where the sisters fight. So anyway, beat egg whites. You have those 3 egg whites until they start to peak, and then slowly add this cornstarch mixture, which is a thickening. Well, it makes a real nice, heavy, substantial filling of egg whites, and then you pour them over the cooled pumpkin mixture. So you end up with kind of a souffle that has been thickened, and it has the pumpkin and everything in it. And you pour that over the cool crust and the first layer and then put it in the refrigerator. So it's complicated. That's why I wrote this out as carefully as I could. Uh-huh. And so if you ask for it, you'll get it. But it is easy enough to do, but you've got to get those steps. And then, of course, whipped cream, if you want to serve it with whipped cream. I don't always necessarily have it with whipped cream, but this has been a great favorite, just called a pumpkin tort.
So it's sort of like a pumpkin cheesecake with a pumpkin meringue on top.
Yes, yes.
Well, that sounds pretty good. I wouldn't turn that down if someone offered a piece of that.
I guess I want to call it crustless, since it does have that kind of, I mean, you were thinking of a pie crust.
Today on Focus, we're remembering our late chef in residence, Doyle Moore. He joined the show for more than 30 years to share recipes and stories with us. Former Focus producer Harriet Williamson says it was Doyle's style that made the show radio treasure.
Doyle was an artist, and I would think he was a visual thinker, and that ability allowed him to be a great radio guest because he was painting pictures for the listener. For example, in his recipe for frog legs sauce piquant, Doyle describes the frog legs as looking like Barbie legs. Then Doyle went on to talk about his family role in hunting frogs and dissecting frogs in 10th grade, and then naming the muscles of the frog leg. Doyle's role went far beyond being chef in residence. He was Renaissance man with his encyclopedic knowledge, his humor and his stories. And it was really Doyle and his personality that made this program possible. I was asked to talk about my favorite Doyle recipes, and my favorites really revolve around Doyle and his stories about the recipe. So here's an example. Doyle's style is he gives the recipe. This particular recipe was for Irish soda bread. So he talks about the techniques for making sure the ingredients come together correctly. Yeah, so apparently there is too much kneading, he says, ruins this bread. So he tells us the bread is baked at 325 degrees. Now that leads to a description of how the 325 degrees reflects the temperature of bread baking in a fireplace, bread oven, years ago. Then Doyle proceeds to describe the nature of life around the hearth and why furniture is constructed with high backs to retain warmth as the family waits for the bread to bake. So this is radio treasure. The listeners have the ingredients, how to make it, and then Doyle takes us beyond the recipe. So in a way, the hearth that Doyle describes is a metaphor for the talk around the microphone and the warmth extended by Doyle and by David, which is extended out to the listeners. Doyle had an encyclopedic knowledge of food and cooking techniques, but he was also a learner. He always appreciated hearing from listeners about a food product, a technique that was unfamiliar. In the mac and cheese program, a listener helped him figure out that it was evaporated milk that his mother must have used in a recipe. It is remarkable in radio history that Doyle Moore was a guest once a month for over 30 years. April 2012 was the last Doyle Moore cooking program on WILL Radio. The program ran as it always had, with no mention that it was the last. I think it would have been impossible for David and Doyle to do that program if there had been any talk of it being the end to the show.
David Inge told us earlier in the hour that doing the cooking shows with Doyle meant a lot to both of them, and that Doyle enjoyed the show for the same reason he enjoyed the holidays. It was a time when he had a chance to talk about food and share stories with people he valued. David also says Doyle enjoyed making things you might only prepare once a year. They talked often about gifts from the kitchen.
One of the things that we see a lot is that foods have special places in people's lives that has to do with their families and with their growing up, and often it's attached to some special day. What are your special holiday foods? Something that you're really looking forward to doing? Maybe you only do that one time, something that you only make one time during the year. Give us a call and tell us about it. We'd be happy to hear from folks and get them involved in the program. Hey, welcome back.
Yes, thank you. I'm here.
I'm glad to have you here. Is there anything in particular that you were thinking about, well, this is something now, time to do this?
Mainly because I have been cooking a little bit more than I have in the past, and I'm enjoying it so much, and I just thought, I enjoy making things for other people. I've been doing that. I like that very much. I thought, you know, that really is a joy to, gosh, I can make something that somebody likes. Mm-hmm. And I've been doing that because my eating habits have changed and altered, and they aren't quite as florid as they used to be. But so I get by making the things that I would like to make and then giving them away. I mean, there are a lot of gifts from the kitchen kind of attitudes, and I pay more attention to that.
Well, we have a couple of callers here to join us, and we'll start with somebody in Downs. How about that? Line number four. Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
If we're talking about holidays and giving away, I want to tell you a tradition that we have established in our family. I make on Christmas Eve Day something, a cardamomacrans. Which is Swedish. I'm not Swedish. I just found this recipe with a beautiful picture and had to make it. But it's just a rich cardamom-flavored bread that's made into that's braided and then made into a round.
The Finnish call it pula.
Oh, okay.
Yes, I know that. Tell us about it.
Well, it makes these two big 14-inch rounds.
Oh, you put them into a ring? After you braid it?
No, you just braid it and attach it, you know, form it into a, attach the ends together so it makes a round.
Yeah.
A wreath.
A wreath, yes.
Well, after I made it, it was just so much.
Yes.
A huge amount. So this is our Christmas morning bread.
Oh, good.
It's what we eat when we open packages. But on Christmas Eve, the tradition is this bread is baked, and we take it to someone.
Oh, nice.
And it goes to someone who's done something nice for us, someone who's had a hardship, someone who's has 120 people at their house for Christmas, someone, you know, it just changes every year. The whole family gets in the car, we take it, we steadfastly refuse to go into the house.
Yes.
Because no one needs anybody new
right.
on Christmas Eve day. And it has become a lovely tradition.
Do you sing?
We used to, and it depended on how many people are here and how they do.
I think
my father was a great singer, and when he was with us, we always sang.
I think that you're describing something I think is a Swedish custom with this wreath of bread to go around and sing and give it to people. You're still doing what was done a long time ago.
Well,
I think that's wonderful. I think that's wonderful.
None of that is my tradition.
No, but it's a good one to do, isn't it?
But we've been doing it for so long, and it really is nice.
What a delight.
My friend who does come from a Swedish tradition tells me that you have to bounce the S when you pronounce it. So I called it cardamom krans when I was talking to her. She said, no, it's cardamom kransa.
Oh, that's good. We'll put a little E on the end.
Right.
Secret E on the end. Well, that's very, very good. Well, that's the delight that I mean, and it does make you feel good when you do it, and it's something that you can do, and that makes you feel good, too.
It's also fun to sort of sit around and say, who are we taking this to this Who needs it? Who deserves it? Who's a new friend? Who's, you know, there are all kinds of reasons, too.
Well, I'm glad. Thank you very much for
You're
that.
Welcome.
I like it.
Thanks for the call. Now, for us here, let's talk with somebody else, and this will be somebody in Charleston. Line number one. Hello.
Oh, thanks for your programs. I have been a regular listener.
Good.
I'm not from Illinois, but when we came here, there were two things that I was introduced to. One were the wild persimmon, and the second one were black walnuts, since we have both of those on our property.
Oh, my, yes.
This year happened to be a rather exceptional year for the persimmons, and they were nice size. And so we gathered them and then strip the flesh and freeze the pulp.
Oh, yes.
But substitute persimmon for a good pumpkin chiffon pie.
Oh, you'd make
and
it that
we
way.
We serve this for Thanksgiving as well as Christmas. I don't really make it the rest of the year.
Yes.
But the rest of the pumpkin, I mean the persimmon, I use in a pumpkin cookie recipe with the black walnuts.
Oh, black walnuts
and
it's
persimmons. Just excellent. And I give my gifts that I give to all our nieces and nephews are an international box of cookies, and
yes.
One of those I include are these persimmon black walnut cookies.
Oh, that sounds
you can use a favorite recipe with this. It's just a matter of substituting a bitter food.
Persimmon pulp instead of
pumpkin.
Yes. I don't know if it still exists. Somebody can probably call and tell. But since I've been here so long, this is my 51st or 2nd year at the university. And when you walked out of the old architecture building going over toward the library, which would be from the south going to the north, there were 5 persimmon trees. And I used to go out and gather the persimmons. I haven't done it for so long. I don't know if it's still there or not. By folklore, they're called possum persimmons. And
yeah.
Yeah, they're little ones. Yeah.
They have a lot more flavor.
They have a lot of flavor.
They're Hitachi.
And you have to wait until they are frozen before you can eat them.
Right.
They freeze and then fall onto the ground. I love them. I don't know.
If you can get there before the deer and the possums and raccoons.
Exactly. Isn't that true?
I'm drooling at persimmons and black walnuts. That is good. Black walnuts and persimmons.
Thank you for taking my call.
I'm going to look that up. That's going to be a new favorite of mine already.
Well, thank you.
Black walnuts.
Thanks for the call. I remember we've talked about persimmons, and you mentioned that you very generously mentioned the secret. Talked about
where they were. I don't know if they're still there or not.
No.
Maybe somebody will call in and say, "Oh yes, they're still there. I got some yesterday."
I'm Jim Meadows, and today on Focus, we've been listening back to interviews and sharing memories of WILL's late chef-in-residence, Doyle Moore. Do you remember when he was a guest on the show? Did you remember a recipe he gave that you tried? Or did you give him one? Post on our website at will.illinois.edu/focus, or you can find us on Facebook and Twitter at Focus580. Today's show was produced by Lindsay Moon. This is Focus on WYLL.
Well,
I know you don't like to.
We have to stop. We had to go. We're all
what?
Done. That's it.
I've got 215 recipes.
Well, I'm sorry. We'll have to leave.